the vast majority of folks who get accepted to Big Sky are just really excited. They've heard by word of mouth what a great festival this is. We have media attention, industry attention, and just the respect of the filmmaking peer network.
This is A New Angle, and I'm your host, Justin Angle, marketing professor at the University of Montana. This podcast is my chance to speak with cool people doing awesome things in and around the great state of Montana. We are proudly underwritten by First Security Bank and Blackfoot Communications. Surprise! I bet you didn't expect to see me in your feed today. So much great content and so few Tuesdays. So, we're hijacking your Thursday for a special episode with Rachel Gregg, the executive director of the Big Sky Film Institute. That's the organization that brings us the highly acclaimed Big Sky Documentary Film Festival. The festival opens on February 14th and runs through the 23rd. In this conversation, Rachel shares the history of the festival and what we can expect from the Film Institute in the coming years. She also gives us a sneak peek of what to expect at this year's event. So let's get into it right now. Okay, so we're here today with Rachel Gregg. Rachel, thanks for coming on the podcast.
Thanks, Justin.
This is a big week.
It's huge.
Yeah. Announcing the films for this this year's Big Sky Documentary Film Festival. You're the executive director of
yes,
the film
sir.
Festival.
Mm-hmm.
Actually, is it called the Film Festival or the Film Institute? Like, what is your title, actually?
Right, yep. If I'm doing it right, I'm the executive director of the Big Sky Film Institute, of which the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival is our largest program.
Okay, so. And a few other programs that we'll talk about. But before that, let's get into why film? How'd you get into film?
Sure. Kind of by chance.
Okay.
You know, I'm an alum of the University of Montana.
Entertainment management.
Yep. Yeah. While I was getting my certificate and finishing my master's degree, I worked at the Wilma Theater. And
And you got your master's in environmental rhetoric.
Yes,
right?
Indeed.
What is that?
I studied communication and an emphasis in environmental rhetoric.
Okay.
And specifically, I happened to be studying environmental documentary film as part of my professional paper I wrote for my my master's degree. And essentially, that's looking at how people talk about the environment.
Yeah.
And my emphasis was on social movement, mm-hmm. and how documentary film is used to motivate wide swaths of people and get them excited, interested, educated, aware
yeah.
of environmental issues specifically. So, yeah, I actually wrote my paper on a film called Food, Inc., which a lot of people have
probably
heard
of. Oh, yeah, I know Food,
of.
Inc.
Yep.
Yeah,
yep.
Powerful
and,
film.
And I was comparing it to another film called Bag It, which is about plastic bags, essentially.
Yeah.
and
not
plastic
to be confused
in
with baguette in the food category.
No.
Sorry,
I
couldn't resist that joke. It was a bad one.
Yeah, so I actually, it's somewhat unpopular with people because I said that Food, Inc. actually isn't great for starting a social movement. However, mm-hmm. you know, as it lived out into the world, it has had lasting effects effective.
Yeah, what was the basis of that argument?
I was saying that the rhetorical tools I was studying and the theory of communication that I applied to the analysis said that Bagot was actually using better tools for teaching people how to take action that
sure.
collectively, social movement-wise, would be more effective in the long term. So I do really like Food, Inc., and I probably haven't eaten factory chicken since I watched that film.
Sure.
But I found that Bagot had all of these really interesting tools, a character that convinces you uh-huh. to really care about the things the plastic we use and put on and in our bodies.
Sure.
And, you know, sort of groundswell things that feed into more momentum over time and get people to work together to create change. So,
and at that point, were you looking to make film right out of school?
No, actually,
okay.
I am not a filmmaker.
Yeah.
Hopefully someday, and I have been involved in producing a few projects,
mm-hmm.
and I've worked with entities as a funder of films. But I wasn't actually looking to get into film. I was working at the Wilma because I wanted to get into concert promotion, just
okay.
like a lot of students coming out of that entertainment management
mm-hmm.
program. But I... was working at the Wilma, helping with shows and community events and so on, and I got totally seduced by the film side because this was back when the Wilma was still a theater.
Yeah.
This was just prior to the log jam age.
Okay.
So, I was promoting local film events and some of the indie films that came.
Yeah, a ton of like ski films and indie films and the Big Sky Film Fest, which we'll get to.
Right. Yeah. A lot of the films that, you know, now they go to the Roxy for that great indie programming they have there. So, yeah, when the film festival, the Big Sky Festival, would come to the Wilma, I mean, just the energy, the excitement in the community and the filmmakers who came and the incredible programming, I thought, wow, this is really interesting and effective. And I was quite the tree hugger in college and really drawn to the environmental stories that were in the festival. So that's when I really started paying attention. It goes a little farther back. My brother showed me a film called Red Gold when I visited him in the Arctic where he lives. The film is about the pebble mine. Is essentially a look at, you know, the fishing economy, the recreation economy in that watershed that would be extremely damaged were the pebble mine to move ahead, and just really beautiful filmmaking. And I got super fired up to get involved on that issue because of that film, and that carried over into my career now, my professional paper, my master's degree, and now I don't know if I could have hit it more on the nose with studying environmental documentary film and now working for the festival to bring those stories to Missoula so we can sit down and talk to each other about these things.
Absolutely. And so how long have you been with the Film Institute?
So I was actually hired to produce the festival in 2017.
Okay.
And my predecessor moved on, and that opened up the executive directorship, and the board asked me to stay. So I've been the director since probably fall of 2016.
Okay.
So I'm headed into my fourth festival now.
Fourth festival. Yeah. Well, that's exciting. Let's get into it. Let's talk about the festival itself. Yeah. It's a 9-day festival.
Ten days, sorry.
Well, yeah. I just can't do math. But February 14th to the 23rd, so coming right up.
Yes.
What are you most excited about?
It's always about the films for
me. Of course.
You know, what's amazing, I've inherited this incredible festival that hundreds of filmmakers, thousands around the world know about. And as a documentary filmmaker, they want to come and be part of it. And so it's because we have this international acclaim, we get the most incredible, highest quality films coming here, and the filmmakers come as well.
Mm-hmm.
So, a lot of great stories coming our way again this year. You know, year over year, it sort of changes the tone overall of what comes to us. I've noticed this in my four short years here. You know, 2016 to 17 was an interesting year politically, and we saw like a lot of satire come out of it that year because we weren't sure quite how to process this new situation we were facing domestically. And the year after that was a much more somber tone, processing some of the consequences and results of a new political age.
Sure.
Last year, that actually spread into an international perspective. Hmm. So it wasn't just what's happening to American politics, but how is this spilling over into the way the world reacts to what's happening in the United States? And that's, of course, politically. We have lots of other stories that are more lighthearted or just personal.
Mm-hmm.
Just the way people experience and process the world all over the place. So
before we kind of get into what we might expect at this year's edition, let's maybe talk about the history, because now it's such an established thing. Like people come from all over the world, and you get all these premier elite filmmakers. But it didn't start that way. Tell us maybe some of the history.
Yeah. So Big Sky started in 2004, and essentially it was a few local documentary enthusiasts who said, you know, maybe if we threw together a weekend of nonfiction films, people would come and they would enjoy it. And we'll curate some films we think Missoula would really love, and then some other work that might really challenge an audience and get them interested in the nonfiction genre.
Okay.
And
what do you mean by challenge an audience?
Sure. You know, we all gravitate towards certain things. Maybe you like ski movies or fishing porn or
comfort.
Yeah. Maybe you really like international stories. But what we're hoping people will do is come to the festival because they see something they like and want to learn more about.
Mm-hmm.
And then they'll encounter a story about a Syrian refugee,
right,
about a wheelchair-bound businessman, mm-hmm, about indigenous stories. I mean, there's just so much to see that you might not seek out otherwise.
Right, right.
So by challenging an audience, we mean discovering things they didn't think they even wanted to know or learn about.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really the power of Big Sky, is because it's a big 10-day festival with over 150 films every year, there is so much to discover. That's one thing we've remained committed to, is keeping the festival really big,
uh-huh,
so that not only can we give opportunity for more filmmakers that way to get their work into the world, but also to help our audience discover a whole range of perspectives and ideas. You know, we're not pushing any certain agenda. In general, documentary film is somewhat more progressive and, mm-hmm, digs really deep. But there's so much to learn for, there's something for everyone, I always say. It's really exciting what you can discover.
Yeah, and the film festival doesn't really have a particular topical theme.
No.
You got such a diverse array of types of film and topics and,
right,
and issues. Talk about that. Like, because a lot of times a film festival sort of develops, you know, a theme. Like, you go there to get environmental films. You go there to get action sports films. You go there to get, you know, like the Wildlife Film,
yep,
Festival that we,
right,
have here in Missoula as well. How is that sort of broad diversity sort of conceptualized from the beginning?
Sure. So it kind of comes down to just what comes to us, honestly.
Okay.
You know, because there is so much out there, I hate to, you know, put a box around it and say, we're only going to show people films like this. Because maybe, mm-hmm, we say we're going to show films about music this year or have that emphasis. I wouldn't want to exclude an amazing film about, you know, climbing Everest.
Sure,
or
whatever it is.
Exploring jungles in South Africa. We want to... What we're really looking for is the best documentary storytelling out there.
Okay.
High quality films that are nuanced and ethical, and that sort of push boundaries and help people think about things differently or more broadly. So yeah, to kind of make a box and say this is what we're shooting for,
sure,
that can be challenging, even though we're getting, I mean, we're near 2,000 entries every year,
wow,
now, and we,
wow,
program the festival only from the open call. So we are, mm-hmm, not going out and curating except for our retrospective programs. We are not handpicking what comes here. We are asking filmmakers, send us your work, and from that we'll build a program.
Is that distinct from other large film festivals, Sundance, South by Southwest, etc.?
It is, yeah. And as far as the percentage of films coming from the open call, our program is 90%, over 90% from the open call.
Okay.
Other larger festivals are going to be much lower than that. But, you know, we ask filmmakers to pay to enter the film festival.
Okay.
It helps helps our nonprofit pay for that process of viewing and selecting.
Sure.
And so we want to be true to that and say, yes, we're actually pulling our program from the folks who, mm-hmm, sent us their films, as opposed to saying, well, thanks for the money. We're going to go out here and pick what we want from, you know, whatever's playing at Sundance or something.
Yeah, or try to solicit some big name and,
right,
big film. I mean, has,
right,
that ever been part of the consideration? Is we want to try to get some big name documentary film to debut here so we can use it as a draw for other people?
Sure. We'd be irresponsible not to
pay
attention to those things. And what we've done is just try to cultivate relationships,
okay,
with those big filmmakers so that they do submit to the,
sure,
festival.
Yeah.
And that we're getting that work through the open call. And most of those filmmakers really do respect that process. You know, we're sort of a mid-level festival at this point. So, you know, we're bookended by these big behemoth Sundance and South,
yep,
by are right around Big Sky in January and March. And so we're still competing for some of those titles. So
yeah,
folks don't mind coming here after they premiere at Sundance. But then, you know, what if they would like to leverage Big Sky acceptance into, hey, actually, we'd like to world premiere at South by Southwest.
Sure.
So it is a little bit of a game and a negotiation sometimes. However, the vast majority of folks who get accepted to Big Sky are just really excited. They've heard by word of mouth what a great festival this is. We have media attention, industry attention, and just the respect of the filmmaking peer network. So,
yeah, can you talk a little bit about the process, maybe from the perspective of the filmmaker? I know we had Eric Becker on who had his film Return to Mount Kennedy at the festival last year.
Love that film.
And he talked a little bit about like the mechanics of trying to bring a project like this to life. So, you know, filmmakers are bringing their work to life. They want to expose it to more people. They want to probably get some form of distribution or monetize the film in some way.
Yep.
So, yeah, how does your film festival fit into this creative and distribution process for filmmakers?
Sure. You know, we've actually tried to position ourselves as an accessible festival in the sense that if you come as a filmmaker, this is a laid-back town.
Yeah.
There is not much pretension in Missoula, if any. And all of the VIPs and visitors coming for the festival encounter each other at, you know, our party at the Missoula Art Museum or at Charlie's after everything's said and done for the day. It's everybody's kind of running in the same circles, and there's not that pressure like there might be at other big festivals.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what we really try to elevate. We don't position ourselves as a marketplace. You know, there's benefits to being a marketplace where you're going to encounter a sales agent, a distributor, and they might buy your film straight out of Big Sky. However, that creates a pressure that we don't necessarily think is as valuable in this atmosphere. Of course, you know, we wouldn't turn that down if it was something we could do down the road. But what we want to preserve is the ability to create relationships.
Okay.
That's where we have really had traction with Big Sky, is people form relationships here that become future collaborations. And now that we're 17 years in, we're seeing that happen year after year. Folks that came with separate films in the past produce something together and bring it back to Big Sky, which is, you know, it's a relationship industry like entertainment tends to be.
Right.
And so that's what we're really trying to cultivate here, as opposed to just making it the dollars and cents.
Right.
It's more important. I always tell people my job is to start conversations, whether that's with, you know, audience members who see a film and learn something new, or between producers and in film industry who want to make sure a project makes it out into the world.
And it seems like a key component of that that objective is a thing like Doc Shop.
Right.
Right. So tell us about Doc Shop and what the goals of that part of the festival are.
Sure. So Doc Shop is our industry conference. We call it the Doc Shop Filmmakers Forum,
mm-hmm.
which is very intentional. It's meant to be a conference that's not really about, I'm going to sit up here and talk down at you, audience. It's more of meant to be an open forum where you know, cutting edge ideas in the film industry or just nuts and bolts things about what it means to be a career filmmaker.
Right.
You know, talking about how those things work together, creating open lines of communication, not just, you know, advice and mentorship, but really thinking about how do I as an independent filmmaker tap you as that panelist to help me forward my next project or mm-hmm. idea. So, the Doc Shop has really grown over the years. We are very fortunate to get funding from the National Endowment for the Arts for the last 3 years to bring really high-level folks to Missoula from the documentary industry to talk about a variety of things. We always have a theme for the conference. This year, we're going to talk about sustainability and integrity.
Yeah, why those two themes?
Sure. You know, sustainability is a big, hot topic in the documentary industry right now. It is hard to be a documentary filmmaker.
So you mean sustainability as far as can I sustain a career
in
this space?
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So, you know, for so many documentary filmmakers, it's a side gig. Most of them are producing commercials, maybe working on feature sets.
Yep.
Maybe they're a graphic designer or a credit designer or a sound guy.
Something.
But on the side, they want to tell a story about, you know, a low-income housing project in their hometown.
Mm-hmm.
Or they want to travel to Botswana and talk about immigration and religious politics, whatever it may be. It's usually a side career for filmmakers. And so we're trying to provide tools and ideas about how to step more into that as your full-time gig. You know, Big Sky wants to really inspire the people who are storytellers to get them to keep making documentary film because we think it's a powerful and important medium. Mm-hmm. And so nurturing those careers is important, and that's what DocShop is meant to do.
A New Angle is underwritten by First Security Bank and Blackfoot Communications, two cool companies doing awesome things all over Montana.
Hi, this is Steve Albini, and you're listening to A New Angle.
Yeah, it's interesting thinking about sustainability. I mean, I don't know if these forces have occurred, like in photography, but I would imagine with the rise of digital photography and the accessibility of good equipment, it seems like we're in this golden age of documentary films. I mean, they're so powerful, so popular, so easy to get, whether it's Netflix or a great film festival or whatever.
Yeah, I think that's the key, actually, is that it's more readily available. And as more streaming platforms and ways to consume content popped up, suddenly content producers realized that nonfiction really resonates with people. It's not just fiction storytelling. We want to know, I mean, it kind of started with reality TV. and as the quality of filmmaking really, really came up, documentary started getting so much more popular, and people really are gravitating towards nonfiction on streaming platforms.
Sure. Yeah, and those forces coalesce to you increase quality, but you also increase supply dramatically, which that's competition among filmmakers for eyeballs, right? And so that leads to price pressure, and the sustainability is a big issue.
Yeah.
Talk about the other theme, integrity. What does that mean in this space?
Sure. Yeah, so the other kind of hot button thing, we try to make sure DocShop is really relevant as to what's happening in the industry, and there's been such a push for diversity and inclusion in documentary filmmaking. You know, last September, I went to a conference put on by the International Documentary Association called Getting Real, and they did a whole block of talks called Decolonized Docs.
Interesting.
And this was about...
That's a provocative title.
Yes, indeed.
Yeah.
I really like it. So Decolonizing Docs is meant to really push people to understand not just how to tell a broader range of stories and make sure that lots of voices are being heard, but to make sure that the people behind the lens and the gatekeepers in the industry are people of color.
Sure.
Women. Finding more diversity at all levels of the documentary industry and economy is really important. Even the audience. Who are the people seeing documentaries?
Yeah.
I think that there's been a pretty common demographic over the last at least 30 years. And now we're seeing that shift again since there's more access to documentary films. But breaking down those barriers at every level is so important. And documentary lends itself to educating people about how to decolonize other things as well.
Sure.
And so that's what we're tackling when we're talking about integrity at DocShop this year is how are we talking about inclusion? How are we involving Indigenous artists and elevating their work? How are we making sure that more women are in positions of power and behind the lens? How are we making sure that people of color come to the theaters and see films? All sorts of different things. So this year we'll be having a conversation with the Brown Girls Doc Mafia.
Okay, to talk tell us about who they are.
Sure, that's women of color who are essentially, it's a community of women who are working to just support each other, right? This is not about...
Within documentary film.
You got it,
okay.
Yeah, this is not about tokenizing. It's about normalizing the fact that that these are incredible artists and they deserve space. So we're creating that space and trying to be more intentional about the choices. So, you know, if I put together a panel of filmmakers, I'm going to put women and people of color on it because they're amazing artists, not because they're women and people of color. That is where we're trying to get is, you know, stopping trying to be so obvious that we're our stats are more diverse, as it were, and more just making that part of our daily decisions and thinking. That's where we're trying to push that. So the Brown Girls Doc Mafia will come to talk about how they've created those communities and how they're shifting that narrative. We're also going to have a panel of Indigenous filmmakers talking about new media, VR, transmedia, XR, how Indigenous artists are really gravitating towards that.
What's XR? I caught those, I had to look it up. I didn't know what XR is.
I had to look it up because I didn't either. But essentially, because there's so many different types of technology, it's well, let me just give you an example.
This is the easiest. Yeah.
Google has this cool new technology. I think it's called Paintbrush. And you wear a VR headset, and it interacts with a brush or
a VR digital virtual reality brush
you have in your hand, and you can paint with it. You can wave your arm around and, you know, write your name. It'd be kind of like using a sparkler at, at 4th of July, right? And you paint your name. So it's just like that, but the headset interacts with the what you're doing with your hands and creates this artwork. So, so XR typically recognizes the environment you're in. So, you know, I could be sitting here in this studio and painting the desk or the microphones in front of me.
Oh, gosh.
And so it's creating both a real and a virtual world and creating technology that helps those things interact.
Awesome. Yeah. Well, let's talk more about 2020. I mean, I can push it a little bit. The film festival is a week or so away, but like what can we expect?
Sure. So, couple of our big programs this year. Every year we invite a couple of filmmakers who are veterans in the industry and have a body of work under their belt as our retrospective artists.
Okay.
So our first weekend will be featuring the Ross brothers, Bill Ross and Turner Ross, who are really quite young. They're in their early 30s and have about six feature films under their belt already.
Wow. Yeah.
Their work is really focused, it's place-based filmmaking.
Mm-hmm.
Their first film is The Zip Code from their hometown, and they basically just introduce characters and vignettes from the place they grew up and introduced the world to that.
And what is that hometown?
It's in Ohio.
Okay.
Yes, now the name of the town is skipping my mind, but they did the same thing in New Orleans where they live now, a film called Chupatulas.
Yeah.
So again, just the people, places, things, sounds, sensations of one corner of the world. So the Ross Brothers' newest film just premiered at the Sundance Film Festival. It's called Bloody Nose, Empty Pockets.
Okay.
And this film, similar to their previous work, was perspectives from a certain corner of the world. This time they were in a bar that's on the outskirts of Las Vegas. And it's basically this is all happening right after the 2016 election, which, you know, so many filmmakers tried to find a way to capture what was going on in the hearts and minds at that time. And this is where they did it. And I think that's going to be really compelling to Missoula. Obviously, Sundance found it interesting, and we really love all of their work. You know, we obviously chose them for this big program, so we can't wait to show that. And then they're also going to be doing a masterclass as part of Doc Shop, and we're going to have it in a bar. So keeping with the theme. So yeah, they'll talk a little bit about their influences in their work and how they have found sustainability as filmmakers, as a duo specifically.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Excellent. Anything else you can kind of tip your hat to at this point?
Sure. I mean, I should probably buzz some of the films
that
have really been sticking with me. You know, a couple of Missoula films, I think just the regular film goer would really love here. Super Frenchie is a film about basically the most prolific ski-based jumper in the world.
Ooh.
Is from France, and he has made this incredible career of ski-based jumping. You know, one of the most dangerous things you can do, skiing off the side of a cliff and parachuting down. It's an amazing long story that's followed him for many years of his life from, you know, when he really started taking big risks and how he went bigger and bigger, all the way to, you know, meeting his wife and having a child and trying and weighing risk and how that changes over time. Yeah. So that beautiful kind of nuanced narrative underneath these really cool shots of this guy doing insane things. Mm-hmm. Just a lovely character. So
I mean, that film about Shane McConkie, like, you know how it's ending.
Indeed.
And like, I was still driven to tears, like in shock at the end, watching, you know, his demise unfold, even though you know it's coming. So, I'm stoked
and
for that
Shane,
one.
Yeah, it's a great film. Shane was obviously really influential.
I'm sure.
For this athlete. And he's being in that world has lost many of his friends. And
it's part
so
of the
that's,
deal.
Yeah, part of his daily struggle. But it's also, you know, you see what a powerful pull a sport like that has on somebody. Mm-hmm. And, you know, it makes you think about, is this an addiction? Is this just something he can't live without? It's such a. It's really beautifully done. I'm excited for that one.
Awesome.
Yeah, another one Missoulians are going to really love is The House That Rob Built.
Okay.
This is about Robin Selvig, the beloved Lady Grizz coach.
Yeah.
So a documentary many years in the making. We're really excited about it because Big Sky Film Institute is the fiscal sponsor for this project.
Mm-hmm.
We wanted to support this hometown film and did what we could to get them to the finish line, and now we get to premiere it at the festival.
Fantastic.
So we can't wait for Missoula to see it. It is.
And is he going to be there?
I hope so.
Heck yeah.
Why wouldn't he? Yeah. I can't wait to. I know Robin likes the film, and it'll be, you know, this. He's such a humble guy, and that comes through in the film, and he's inspired, I mean, almost a whole generation of women athletes who have, I mean, totally put a pin on the map for Missoula and the Grizz program for. You know, graduation rates. And,
oh, yeah, all of it.
And conference championships. And I mean, his stats are just amazing. But you would never hear Robin talk about that, right?
Sure.
He just wants to. He loves basketball. He loves inspiring people to do their best. And that's what this film captures. So we're excited for that one, too.
Excellent.
Yeah. You know, some other interesting films, again, that would challenge folks and would be sort of discovery pieces. Another film that just came out of Sundance is called Feels Good Man.
Okay.
And this is about Pepe the Frog, which he became an internet sensation.
That's right.
But originally, Pepe was just kind of this frumpy, funny character in a comic strip written by an artist from the Bay Area. That was called Boys Club.
Mm-hmm.
And suddenly, somehow, Pepe gets co-opted by somebody on Reddit and created into a meme.
Yep.
And not to spoil it too hard, but he became a tool of the far right movement.
Yeah. Yeah.
And, you know, became a really ugly piece of rhetoric when he was supposed to be this kind of delightful character. So this movie is both about, you know, the power of the internet to really sway public opinion and cultivate ideas and rhetoric, of course, and also this delightful artist who created the character to begin with, who finds himself pulled into this world where he has to decide, do I fight for Pepe and my work? Or, you know, do I just let it go and admit defeat because the internet is so powerful?
Mm-hmm.
So really interesting.
Yeah,
well
that's
done.
Be a good
really
one.
Hard story to tell, I think. So I was impressed with the filmmaking, and those filmmakers will be here as well. So,
awesome.
Yeah. So
well, I mean, so much awesome stuff. Like, let's not give it all away, because part of the deal is discovery. Like, just getting the program, pulling up the schedule, and just finding like all this. Like, it's.
Yeah.
Kind of a treasure hunt in a way.
Mm-hmm.
I want to be respectful of your time, Rachel, but I do want to talk about, I mean, the Big Sky Documentary Film Festival is one piece of the Institute's work. You've got a lot of other things going on. Recently moved into the new Zach building, so you have a new home.
Mm-hmm.
And that's going to enable a lot of other cool things from your organization.
Yeah.
Talk a little bit about the other stuff you do.
Yeah, that's the vision. So the Institute, of course, the festival is our pillar event.
Mm-hmm.
But we also engage in youth education and artist development through the rest of the year, in addition to other documentary programming. So our youth initiatives are six different programs that take filmmakers into schools.
Okay.
Again, to just get that those great films in front of students and engage them in conversation with the artists themselves, perhaps inspire them to pursue a film
career. What an interesting time. Like, I think about this. Like, a filmmaker comes to me in high school, I'm sort of like, yeah, whatever, that's really cool what you do, but there's so many steps between. But you bring a filmmaker into a high school around here, even a grade school around here, they just whip out their phone.
Yep.
I can go do this right. afternoon with my buddies.
Yeah.
And they do.
Right.
And they create awesome stuff.
You got it. Yeah. And we're actually trying to kind of create a pipeline of programs that go from inspiration. So a filmmaker comes into my classroom. And then we have a youth fellowship and a filmmaking workshop that teach the history, the theory, and the fundamentals and the tools for filmmaking.
Right.
All the way down to artist programs that once you're really ready to jump in and pursue the film industry. Then there's the Doc Shop Conference. There's there's the Indigenous Filmmaker Fellowship.
Oh,
there are a number of programs that help shepherd you all the way through into that. And then of course we work with so many partners, which is why we're so excited to be in the ZAC, because we want to do as much collaboration as possible. We work with the MAPS Media Institute to get films down to the Bitterroot and out to Helena during the festival. We work with the Spark program locally to bring sixth graders to the festival on a field trip to watch some films and interact with filmmakers. And you know, the filmmakers in the schools, while filmmakers are here for the festival, it's one of the more memorable things that happen for those filmmakers when they come to Missoula.
Sure.
Yeah, it's not just a great screening with our super engaged community, but they actually get to go connect with students in schools. And that's when they really remember what it's all about, telling those stories and getting the next generation really excited about how to use media. And you know, we're tasked with really promoting media literacy, because students are so inundated with media these days. Media literacy means teaching kids how to be responsible consumers and creators of that media. How do you interact? How do you evaluate a film? What sources are they using? Things like that. So that's really what the Institute is meant to do, teach kids not just about how to make films, but how to do so in a really productive way.
Absolutely. That is so important.
Yeah.
Rachel, when you think, I mean, so you're about to, this is your fourth film fest, right? So assuming you stick around for a while, which we hope you do, you know, 5 years from now, 10 years from now, what do you want this thing to look like and feel like?
Yeah.
What's success or continued success?
Right.
I mean, I don't want to imply it's not successful now.
Indeed. You know, when I think about us really growing, I would obviously like to see the festival continue to become more valuable.
Okay.
I think it's, we really love the size. We really love the fact that there's so many amazing films and that we have this this industry acclaim. We also are struggling for attention.
Mm-hmm.
There are so many festivals in the world. There are so many festivals in Missoula.
That's
you know,
true too.
really solidifying ourselves as a leader in the documentary industry is important to me. And I think to do that, we expand our artist programs. We'd like to do more things along the line of residencies or fellowships, which we're starting to delve into. More opportunities, like I said, to encourage the people who make documentary films to keep doing that and elevating the importance of that. Finding funding opportunities for them, which is so hard. Could we be a source of a grant down the road?
Yeah.
Could we have a residency so people can come to Missoula in the summer, maybe not in February, and get inspired in this cool place where we live, where there's such a healthy artist community, where we can do focus group screenings and editing residencies, things like that, where we can again continue to cultivate the artists here in this place where clearly there's an audience and a love for the art form. How do we translate that into promoting the next generation of artists. So I think it's really just advancing what we're already doing and finding, you know, really sustainable support for that. You know, we're a nonprofit in a town with a lot of nonprofits, and we're constantly looking for how to make it sustainable and productive. So, you know, building strength within the Institute is important. I think also there are so many great efforts for media arts education for youth, and we're a piece of that puzzle here in Montana and Missoula specifically. But there's, I think, even more demand and need for education at that emerging and mid-career artist level. Mm-hmm. And that's where I really see Big Sky going, is being a voice for those filmmakers. We've got all of these youth programs, and then we've got this big professional festival where you can have an exhibition once you've gotten films.
You kind of arrived a little bit.
But there's a gap in the middle there where we want to nurture those artists to become really advanced storytellers, really talented editors. There are so many different hats to wear as a documentary filmmaker. Uh-huh. So how do we teach people to be great grant writers and sound recordists and cinematographers and so on? There's a lot of opportunity there that we'd like to build upon.
That seems so central to what's happening in this community right now.
Right.
I mean, we have such a rich and deep heritage and tradition in the arts. But the community's growing quickly, getting the ZAC its own space downtown, getting your organization in that space, and the vision you're laying out there is just so important to the health of this community. So thank you. Thank you for doing the work.
Yeah, thanks, Justin.
And we want folks to get out there next week, starting on the 14th. How can they learn more about it? Where do you want them to go online to find out more information about the film festival?
Our website, of course. The website is bigskyfilmfest.org.
Awesome. Well, thank you, Rachel. Good luck.
Thank you.
Well, I'm not going to say get some rest because you're not going to, but hopefully after the fest you can relax a little bit.
Yes, sir.
Okay. If you're a regular listener, you already know that next week we're learning all about Joyce Dombrowski. And if you aren't, well, listen next week and that'll pretty much make you a regular. And we're happy to have you. Thanks for listening to A New Angle. We really appreciate it. And we're coming to you from Studio 49, a gift from University of Montana alums Michelle and Lauren Hansen. And remember that A New Angle is supported by CED, Consolidated Electrical Distributors. These guys pretty much sell anything electrical you would ever need, but they also hire a ton of our students. If you want to learn more about jobs at CED, visit cedcareers.com. And before we go, I want to thank some important peeps. Executive producer Stefan Borsum. Producer Aiden Morton, and interns Aspen Runkle and Max Gibson. Huge thanks to VTO, Jeff Ament, and John Wicks for the tunes, and finally, props to Jeff Meese, our master of all things sound. Finally, if you have any questions, suggestions, comments, insults, whatever, please email me at anewangle@umontana.edu. Help us spread the word, and be sure to use the hashtag anewangle when you do. Thanks a lot, and see you next time.